incredible, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through. So tell me why you mad even. Your team gon' be sad leaving after matching up with Brad Stevens. Each season, champion contenders. We drop twice a week like you tryna guard Kemba. Your team whack and your players whacker. I got the inside scoop after hanging up with Jay and Packer. Okay, we about chips here. I'm talking about this year. Banner 12 plus 6 here.
Fast PP.
Top rookie, I'm saying it now. Ain't playing around with Tatum.
Fournier.
Brown. We off the charts, but you gotta play it Marcus Smart. Close out. Cause he pulling up from Harvard Yard. Gang green, it's no other way. So tune in to the pod if you plan on staying up today. You heard? Aziz. Hey, Jay, I see you, player.
She.
Welcome to Anything is Possible! The Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan. And I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And we are coming to you after a flurry of crazy free agency that started just yesterday at 6. Before that, we got a couple of trades from Trader Brad, Brader Trad, just some surprising moves. That I did not see coming, but we'll talk about it all. But I think we have to start with Evan Fournier signing a four-year deal with the New York Knicks for some absurd sum of money. How much was it?
$78 million, up to $78 million.
Up to $78 million. And so the Celtics' big possible free agent, basically the one guy they could sign given their cap situation, is going to the Knicks. Jay, what was your reaction to Fournier signing that deal?
By the time it happened, it wasn't a surprise. Obviously, like when the Celtics went out and got Josh Richardson, who isn't a totally similar player but plays a similar position, is a smaller wing type guy. It seemed unwise to go out and spend close to $80 million to keep Fournier around. Obviously, one kind of theme of this offseason has been that Brad has not, with the exception of Al Horford's halfway guaranteed salary for 2022-2023, Brad has not added any more long-term salary to the Celtics books. And it seems like he's really prioritizing cap flexibility. So Fournier is gone. In retrospect, that trade looks bad. The Celtics didn't give up too much, just a couple second-round picks, but they used a huge chunk of the trade exception. They were not able to spin that into anything else. Fournier played 16 regular season games for the Celtics. He wasn't a huge factor while the Celtics got pummeled by the Nets in the playoffs, and now he's gone. So just a kind of a swing and a miss by Danny Ainge. I see why he made that move, because last year's team was floundering. If Jaylen Brown is healthy for the playoffs, if they get the 4 or 5 seed, who knows? Things could have been different. But in retrospect, that looks bad. And now Brad has a lot of work to do to put together a decent supporting cast, because there are obvious holes on that roster. And the Celtics haven't gotten anyone to bite yet in free agency.
Yeah, the Fournier deal does not look great, but it's also like that was Danny's deal, and now Brad Stevens has to operate in a world where that has happened and there's no control over that. And
given, they call that a sunk cost in economics.
Absolutely a sunk cost. And I think you can criticize Danny for – you're just very impressed with yourself for throwing out an economic term. I can see the shit eating grin on your face.
That's a business and management major.
Business ethics. You can criticize Danny Ainge, I guess, for not trading Hayward, but I really think they thought Hayward was coming back. All of those are past moves. But I think if you're evaluating Brad Stevens right now with the current situation, not paying Evan Fournier for 4 years, $78 million, makes all the sense in the world. Like, you're just – that's a lot of money for Evan Fournier to be – I don't think he's ever going to be the third best player on a championship team. I just don't think he's that good, especially – I mean, he's a good player, and I think he had a raw deal in Boston just because he got COVID, and like it really messed him up because he was complaining about like the lights giving him headaches and things like that. Good luck to Evan Fournier, but I just think it makes a lot of more sense for the Celtics just to not commit 4 years to pretty much anyone.
Carmelo going to the Lakers. Malik Monk going to the Lakers.
Oh, wow. Carmelo, the Lakers pretty much entire strategy is sign everyone who was good in 2011. Trevor Ariza, Dwight
Malik
Howard.
Malik Monk was probably hell in high school in 2011.
That was probably the peak of Malik Monk.
Or maybe even middle school. I don't even know how old he is.
But back to the Celtics, you're right. It wasn't too big a surprise, like, once they got Josh Richardson. I thought, like, that's a solid deal to get Josh Richardson for basically nothing. They had to give up Moses Brown, but basically fit him into the trade where the Hayward – it's not the Hayward trade exception. Whose trade exception was that? Some trade exception. The issue is now – is like, what is the starting lineup? Is Josh Richardson going to be your starting shooting guard? Or because that really hasn't worked ever in the history of Josh Richardson being in the NBA. Like, he had one really good year with the Miami Heat, but was not great in Philadelphia, was not great in Dallas last year. I think I like Josh Richardson as kind of a guy coming off the bench. But if is Josh Richardson like one of your starters, that becomes more of an issue.
Yeah, and then the other issue is that Richardson and Smart have some of the same issues. They both shot 33% from the three-point arc last year. If you're trying to build a team to complement Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, giving them guys to space the floor for them so that they don't have to do all the three-point shooting themselves is pretty important. And I understand why the Celtics did not want to keep Kemba Walker's contract. I understand why they did not want to pay Evan Fournier's contract. I get all that, but they still lost a lot of offensive punch and they haven't really replaced it much. Richardson's a guy who's been inefficient as an offensive player. When he was in Philadelphia, he was part of that team that didn't have enough playmaking, partly because he's not a playmaker.
One
of the primary ball handlers, and that's just not his role.
Great mid-range shooter, though.
So
really
the Celtics have
the mid-range.
They have Tatum and they have Smart to do some of that stuff. But like, I still think this team needs more shooting. This team could use a little more creativity, but definitely shooting. If you look at this roster, like, they lost a ton of shooting from the roster that was at the end of the year last year, and they haven't really replaced it at all. And so, what does Brad do next? He could expand the Tristan Thompson trade and roll that into something bigger and take back more salary in that trade, which I think is a possibility. But the Celtics have watched a lot of guys in the mold of player that they would want sign elsewhere for deals that they could have offered. Patty Mills went to the Nets for the taxpayer mid-level exception. Jeff Green.
But like, who says the Celtics didn't offer the deals? It takes two to tango here. It's like, it's kind of weird.
It doesn't matter. They didn't get them, you know?
But it's like these players have free agency. They have agency in their decisions to where they go. It's like, what? I don't know. Like, you can't blame Brad.
You can't blame Brad for Patty Mills wanting to know the rules.
It seems like you don't know the rules because you're saying you're blaming Brad for not bringing in these guys, but it's not like he had the option to, like,
I never blame Brad. So. I'm just saying this Celtics team has holes right now. As things currently stand, they'd probably need a lot out of Peyton Pritchard. They'd probably need a lot out of Aaron Nesmith. They don't have the size at power forward that they wanted to get this offseason. So my point isn't that it's all Brad's fault that this hasn't worked out for the Celtics so far, that they haven't been able to get the veterans and the edge and the experience that he wanted. But, you know, somehow he needs to retool this supporting cast, because right now they have a 500 team that, you know, I'm not sure that they've improved at all from where they were at the end of last season. You can say that maybe not having Kemba will help, that having Al Horford instead will help. You could say maybe that Josh Richardson sets them up to have, you know, a very physical defense, especially on the perimeter. And I'd agree with that. He's a tenacious dude. But at the same time, like, if you were looking for a quick flip from the Celtics roster, they have work to do. And maybe they go out and get trades. Maybe they sign. Maybe they find someone, you know, that's still left out there and can make a difference. But, you know, a lot of their potential targets, including Jeff Green, Rudy Gay, Otto Porter, Patty Mills, have found other homes. And especially when you look at the types of, you know, power forward that they wanted to add, there are very slim pickings right now in that type of player. And obviously it's really tough to get those types of guys because every team wants somebody like that with the size and the shooting and the ability to guard multiple positions. So we'll see.
The thing that's tough about all of those deals, you mentioned Jeff Green, Patty Mills. I'm not sure exactly the years on Rudy Gay, but the other two, or at least 2 year deals. And there was no scenario, unless they pulled off some crazy trades or something like that, where the Boston Celtics were going to walk out of this offseason as title contenders. Like, there was just – that's the way their current roster is constructed. I don't think there was a clear path for them to be put themselves in contention. And so it feels like the majority of their moves are designed to have as much flexibility next year at free agency,
yeah,
when – Bradley Beal has the opportunity to possibly be a free agent, or the maybe even punting further for the year after that, where we've talked about where guys like Jokic and Embiid are going to be free agents. Like, that's when you're going to kind of hopefully bring in that third star to put around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And so given that, like, you do mention that the roster needs upgrades. I think the question, like, I think it's prudent and to not kind of push to make this big deal just to get, like, I guess, incrementally better this year, knowing that you didn't really, like, you're not going to, like, have a chance to really be a great contender moving forward. And it's about having flexibility for next year's free agency. I think that's one of the reasons why a Marcus Smart and a Robert Williams extension is probably going to be unlikely. Mark Murphy from the Boston Herald said that Marcus Smart's looking for 4 years, $80 million extension. I love Marcus Smart. I trust Marcus Smart. That number gives me a lot of pause, especially if you're trying to build a championship contender, to give him $20 million a year. And so I just think it makes the most sense to go into the kind of next offseason when there's going to be a lot more kind of stars potentially available, when Bradley Beal, the guy everyone seems to talk about, everyone's kind of convinced that they're doing this for Bradley Beal. I don't know if that's the case, but to have that flexibility next offseason seems to be the kind of the design of all of their deals so far.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely does seem like that's one of the priorities from Brad Stevens's front office. I think there's risk in that. If you go into this season and you're close to 500 again, and I'm not saying the Celtics will be, they could be healthier. They could be better. Jason Tatum could be, you know, a top five MVP candidate. There are a lot of ways that they can improve and be better than they were last season, even if they don't make any significant additions from here. But if you are bad again and you risk pissing off Jason Tatum, you risk pissing off Jaylen Brown, you put all your eggs in a basket that you're not sure about. What if Bradley Beal doesn't end up choosing the Celtics a year from now?
Then you sign Kevin Durant, who opts out of his player option.
Okay. Sounds good. That'd be a great idea if it happened. But I'm just saying, like, there's downside to keeping that flexibility too. And the stated goal of Brad Stevens is to add experience and edge to this roster. Now, he did that with Josh Richardson, but he did that at the expense of Evan Fournier. And he added Al Horford, but he did that at the expense of Kemba Walker. So I think the Celtics, like, it just feels like there's something to come that we haven't seen yet. And if not, then this team probably won't be great next season.
Well, they still have the full.
And maybe we shouldn't have expected them to be great next season. We probably shouldn't have expected them to be great next season. But well,
if anyone saw our list of potential free agent targets, it's not like we were like Celtics fans are insane. They're like when this they thought they were getting Lonzo Ball or all these like kind of crazy signing trade deals. Like expectations for this offseason should have been pretty low. Like we thought they were going to re-sign Evan Fournier and then get a guy at the taxpayer mid-level. They didn't get Fournier. They ended up getting Josh Richardson. One part of them not signing Fournier is now they're not a tax team and now have a little bit more to pay for a mid-level. So I think they can pay up to nine, right?
Maybe.
It depends how the salaries work with the Tristan Thompson trade.
They're on the board. They could choose a path that gives them the full mid-level. They could choose a path that gives them the taxpayer mid-level. So we'll see on that.
But there was like our list started with Rudy Gay and Georges Niang. I'm still on that Georges Niang trade, still a best free agent available. But there's just really, I don't know what the expectations were for them to make moves this offseason. Like this is exactly what happening is what we thought. Like I didn't think the Josh Richardson trade was going to happen, but this is like the least surprising kind of start to free agency so far for the Celtics. I don't know what else, like, I don't know what you can really criticize Brad for, what deal, like it's impossible to know what deals he had the opportunity to, but it's not like there was like they had a lot of avenues to add a bunch of talent to this roster. And if I'm a veteran guy who's trying to get a ring, the Celtics just are not on that platform where it's like, oh, they're automatically contenders. Like they're not an appeal. Like they just aren't there yet. So it's like kind of weird to kind of criticize them for not attracting those kind of veteran free agents. I think they're eventually get one. They still have the full mid-level or whatever that ends up being. I think they're going to add someone, but it's just like I don't get the kind of the frustration that they haven't done anything. They didn't have an ability to do much.
Yeah, and I think part of the frustration probably stems from Fournier leaving, and people thought, you know, with Fournier, that's a potentially deep team. If you bring Josh Richardson and Fournier off the bench, or if you start one of those guys and bring the other off the bench, like that's a different looking depth chart.
Does that team, like, does that take you from what, 40 wins to 48 wins, and then you lose in the second round? Maybe, like, I don't. Then you have to pay Evan Fournier for the next $18 million for the next 3 years after that.
Yes, but at the same time, I think it's frustrating for Celtics fans to look at the roster and see, again, you know, 2 or 3 years after being set up in a position that everyone thought they were going to rule the Eastern Conference for a long time to come. Now,
they got to stop living in the past. You got to live in the now. You got to evaluate the decisions for what they have. Like, yes. Was trading for Kyrie Irving? Did it work out? No, but like it happened and we got to move on. Like, did they think Gordon Hayward's going to come back? Yes. Did it happen? No, but you still got to move on. Like they're making the what feels to me like the smart decisions in the moment. Paying Evan Fournier $18 million a year for the next 4 seasons doesn't make any sense to me, especially if you want to go out and get a third star eventually to put around Tatum and Brown. That just, it hampers your entire team, your entire flexibility for a guy who's a solid player and gets you probably what, 5 more regular season wins this year. It's like, it's a very short-term outlook to kind of like be upset that they didn't bring back Fournier on that deal.
Yeah. If the Celtics do stay on this path and do continue to set themselves up with financial flexibility to go after a Bradley Beal or whoever in the future, then now is not the time to judge them, right? Like judge them later when we see what they do with that, if they do get Bradley Beal, if that does lead to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown staying, but Danny Ainge, like we said at the time when Danny Ainge stepped down, he left the Celtics in a situation where creating that path to flexibility was going to be a little painful. And I think we're starting to see the pain involved with that, and that meant letting Evan Fournier go, even though he would have been a helpful player to this team, and that meant, you know, at the moment right now, that means the Celtics depth chart has not substantially improved and may even be worse than it was at the end of last season, at least if they were healthy. So it's going to be a little pain to get there. And maybe Brad has, you know, trades lined up that he can pull the trigger on if they miss on their free agent targets. Maybe he has a backup plan in free agency that could work out. We haven't seen, obviously, the end of this Celtics offseason. But where things stand right now, this is not one of the top four teams in the East. Like, Miami just loaded up. The Bucks won the championship. The Nets offense will be absolutely ridiculous, especially now that they added Patty Mills on top of the guys that they already had. So the Celtics, they're just not in that elite class, and that should be frustrating to Celtics fans. But I agree, like, Brad is, it seems, taking the pain now to hopefully set up the Celtics for something better in the future.
And I think, like, that is the wise long-term approach. I don't think there's anything the Celtics could have really done this year to put them in the top four. But, like, let's talk. Like, it clearly feels like the flexibility is for that 2022 year. Bradley Beal has the potential to be a free agent. Everyone seems to think, like, that's what they're doing. I don't know. I just feel like Bradley Beal is probably going to sign a five-year extension because that's what Bradley Beal does. He stays in Washington and doesn't demand a trade. But there are, like, there's disgruntled stars that exist, like, all the time. You know who's a restrict, like, becomes a free agent that year and has not signed a immediate extension? Luka Doncic, who's reportedly just, like, pissed off with the Dallas Mavericks, and there's a whole bunch of turmoil there.
Luka's already said he's going to sign the max, the supermax, or whatever it is.
Trae Young signed the supermax shortly after free agency started. Has Luka done that yet?
No, but he already said he's going to. So
players say lots of things. Kyrie Irving said he was going to re-sign and be in the Raptors.
He'd be a restricted free agent. There's probably no examples in history of a guy not signing that contract.
What do you think about Julius Randle? He'll be an unrestricted free agent. What do you think about Zach LaVine? I'm just saying there's, like, options and there's points of moving forward. Additionally, I think they're not going to extend Marcus Smart. I don't think they're going to extend Robert Williams. But bringing in Josh Richardson with a $10 million contract. Also, I think Chris Dunn has, like, around a $5 million contract. There's options for trades right now where, if combining all those salaries, where there's, like, and tons of flexibility. I don't know who the star is, the disgruntled star is, but now they have kind of a $5 million slot, a $10 million slot, a 15 to 18, whatever Marcus Smart is at right now. They can do a lot of different things in terms of the trade market that I just think it makes them flexible moving forward. And now it's like you head into next season, you're not going to be a championship team. You're not going to have expectations, but it feels like the Celtics, when they do have expectations, is when they suck. And when they're a scrappy team that is outperforming expectations, everyone has a lot more fun. So let's lower the bar and just be happy with, like, the year of development that is that occurs with Aaron Nesmith, Romeo Langford, and the two Jays.
But that's kind of what you probably said last year, right? After Gordon Hayward left, like let's see what the young guys do. And the young
last
guys
year, did, I talked myself into it because they made
and the
it
young
such
guys
a playoff
did very
run.
Little.
But now the young guys got another year under their belt.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, relying on young guys, you never know.
But I don't think that, like, the Celtics are going to win the championship next year. And so I didn't think they were going to win the championship the year before that. And so, like, whatever happens. I just don't know what, like, and I don't have to watch Tristan Thompson play basketball anymore. And so that's, like, a win for me. What do you think about that deal? Because on its surface, Tristan Thompson is a better player than Chris Dunn or Bruno Fernando. Was that just like and he has an expiring deal as well. Was that just a culture thing? Like, Brad being like, we don't want this guy around. Is that just to make me happy? Explain to me what the thought process was behind the Tristan Thompson deal.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that deal is done. They could still use that Tristan Thompson salary because the other guys came in trade exceptions. They could still use that to roll that into something else. So I'm not
but
sure.
But it's like it's agreed in a framework. It's not like they're going to blow it up entirely. Like, they're most likely sending him to the Kings and getting done from was that, the Grizzlies?
Chris Dunn was on the Hawks, bro.
Oh, the Hawks. Yes, yes, the Hawks.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Tristan Thompson was going to be a third big man. I imagine his agency was not extremely excited about the possibility of him being a third center behind Robert Williams and Al Horford. And
it's just good. You don't like if a guy wants to be a starter and you're not going to be able to give him starter minutes, it's just like better for team chemistry if he's not going to be around. And I don't know if Chris Dunn plays, although the scuttlebutt is that he's also might get moved. We actually just don't know what that trade is going to be as of yet, but I think it makes sense just to free up the center rotation and not have a guy who's pissed off on your team. Generally, I just think that's a good thing.
Yeah, not the worst thing. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I still think the Celtics need, obviously, shooting now.
Well, who's left is the question, because we had that kind of targets. Rudy Gay has signed. Carmelo Anthony has signed.
Justice Winslow?
Is he, anyway,
can, Justice can Winslow, shoot? Anyone? No, absolutely not.
Reggie Jackson? Would you
Avery Bradley, anyone?
Can I interest you? How about Lauri Markkanen? He is restricted, but it doesn't seem like he's had any good times in Chicago. They've spent a lot of money on Caruso and Lonzo Ball already. He's a tall guy. He can shoot. I feel like they need some, like, it's the same thing we've talked about. They need someone with size who can shoot the three, because they need someone who can defend wing defenders so Tatum and Brown don't have to constantly do that, and they can be switchable. And as you said, they need shooting, and I just don't know who else is really, like, great for that who's on the market right now. Like, The thing that's tough is that, like, a lot of the guys who kind of fit that mold are restricted, like Markkanen. I think Josh Hart is a very solid guy who can, like, plays really hard and be on the wing, but he's restricted as well. And then you just go down the list, and it's just, like, not a lot of great talent still left on the board, just because it feels like there, since 6 o'clock yesterday, there have been, what, 50 to 75 free agent signings. If you have notifications on for Woj and Shams, like, it's been nonstop. It's been wild free agency season.
Yeah, it was, the rush at six was fantastic. But yeah, I mean,
the answer is George's Niang, buddy. It's just going to come down to it. It's like, he makes too much sense at this point.
And the Spurs got, or I mean, the Jazz got Rudy Gay. So, player in that mold might be ready to go. George's Niang coming home.
I mean, like, who else do you want to go for? Bryn Forbes, shown to be a guy who can make shots, but is not very reliable on defense. That's the other thing, is like, you evaluate these signings of, like, whether or not these guys can play in a playoff series. So you think about Bryn Forbes, and it's like, oh, he couldn't play on defense. But it's like, the Celtics don't need to worry about that. They just need a guy who can knock down three-pointers in the regular season. And so, I don't know, like, the person they're going to bring in for their mid-level, it's going to be interesting to see, like, who they target, because, one, there's just not a lot of talent out there, but two, it's pretty clearly established that they are not looking to make a deep playoff run. And so does it, like, it, you're looking for a regular season type player.
Yeah, I guess. If you're really going to be pessimistic about it.
I'm being optimistic. I'm just saying, whoever they bring in, it's like, we can lower the bar. I'm all about lowering expectations here, because they just need to bring in a guy on a one-year deal or a two-year deal with a team option so they can maintain that flexibility moving forward. It's like, they're just – everyone wanted Patty Mills. Obviously, Patty Mills wants to compete for a championship. Everyone, like you mentioned, Rudy Gay, Carmelo Anthony – Jeff Green, they're just not going to get these guys. And so you want to get in a guy who brings you a little shooting and a little bit of size. That being said, I think, does this, like, signal or just maybe create an opportunity for Aaron Nesmith or Romeo Langford to, like, step up and get big minutes? We've talked about how important it would be for the Celtics for just one of those guys to develop into a starter level player in the NBA. they have a wide open position. I don't think Josh Richardson should start. I would think that you would have a starting lineup of Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. I think it's going to be Robert Williams, but it might be Al Horford. I don't think those two should start together, and it leaves a place open on the wing. Is this an opportunity for Romeo or Nesmith to kind of step in and be like, we're first-round draft picks, like maybe we can do something here?
Well, I think, first of all, I wouldn't discount if the roster stays like it is right now, I wouldn't discount the possibility of Josh Richardson starting. He's 6'5 and feisty and probably about the same size as Aaron Nesmith or Romeo Langford, honestly.
And Smart, Richardson, Tatum, Brown, and Time Lord is a damn good defensive lineup. Like, they might struggle to score, but like that is one of the better defensive lineups you can kind of run out there.
Yeah, they could probably use a little bit more size, but they definitely will have ball pressure. They'll be feisty. They'll be athletic. They'll be long. So, yeah, if they do start Smart, Richardson, like that's a pit bull type starting lineup, which could be fun. But, yeah, if they don't have another – if they don't sign a veteran to take step above Romeo Langford and Aaron Nesmith – in the pecking order, then there will be opportunity for those guys. I think there will be opportunity for those guys anyway at some point, just because teams always need wings. In Nesmith's case, the Celtics will definitely need shooting, and he could end up playing a big role. After the way he closed last season and now getting a chance to go into summer league and have more of a regular experience going into year two, I think the Celtics should be cautiously optimistic about what Nesmith will give them. He's obviously a really tenacious guy, another guy who can pressure the ball and give you size and length. So I don't know how Romeo will fit, especially like if your guards are Smart and Richardson, and then you have Romeo Langford, who's averaged 7 points per 36 minutes for his career.
You just had that stat ready.
That could be pretty ugly. I'm not sure if that's exactly correct, but it's pretty close. Let me
just
check.
Have the Romeo per 36 stats ready. That's why he's the kid, the god, the legend. I think it's interesting just in terms of like, this is a development year and you're like
7.4 points per 36 minutes for his career.
We'll give it to you Price is Right style, because I think you said six, but you were under. But it's going to be interesting to see if either of those guys can step up and kind of make an impact on the rotation and be that solid seventh or eighth guy on this team this year. There was press conferences today. We did hear from the media. Joe Mazzulla, summer league coach, spoke to the team. And then I think Peyton Pritchard and Yam, my name
said he plans to play in the NBA this year.
Yam's here. So what kind of impact can we get from the European Steph Curry?
Let's tone it down. Until a year ago, until this past year, shooting was by far his weakness. So I would not call him Steph Curry. Like, that is not the comparison at all. He is a flashy young dude. He definitely has some flair to his game. But let's tone it all the way down with that. He has exactly one good season of shooting the basketball, and we'll need
but
to prove a lot
he make
on that
it
front
too. I mean, we'll see here with the Boston Celtics. It's gonna be, I think it's like a fun summer league team, especially with Pritchard, Romeo, and Aaron Nesmith. I did think it was funny. I think the first question for Joe Mazzulla was like, how important is it for the three guys who have been on your team? And Joe Mazzulla had to be like, we have Carson Edwards on the team too. He is also returning. People forget that Carson Edwards still exists, and this is a friendly reminder. But what is like the expectation for, I guess, those three guys and Yam in summer league? Like, I feel like sometimes you expect guys like these are, you're in summer league and you've been in the NBA. You should be a step above everyone else in terms of just like your talent and your readiness to play. What are the expectations for those three guys and the European Steph Curry when the guys go out to Vegas?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously it's different things for different people. So, you know, Romeo Langford, you want to see him show the beginnings of an offensive game. Like, what is he going to become offensively? I don't know. He's never really made three-pointers. He was a slasher, a scorer, you know, in high school, college, but hasn't really shown any of that in the NBA. So is he going to be a point guard, a ball handler? Like, what is he going to be? You want to see him show at least some signs of becoming a viable offensive player. For Peyton Pritchard, he was very much like an off-ball shooter for the most part during his rookie season. He had flashes of running the offense and making plays off the bounce, but you want to see him grow more comfortable with all that stuff.
I want to see him be a playmaker. It feels like he either got to the rim or was the off-ball three guy. I want to see him come off a pick and roll and like make the right read and be the kind of guy where you are pretty comfortable turning the offense over to him when Tatum is, and I guess Smart or not, on the floor.
Yeah, and with Nesmith, like I think we saw what his role will be during his rookie season. Like, he's going to play hard as hell. He's going to defend. And hopefully he'll make shots. To me, like the shooting is the part that the Celtics will really need, and the part that could help define like whether he's a decent rotation player or far better than that. When he came into the draft, he was regarded as the very best shooter in the draft. Someone who could do it off movement, who could spot up, who could have a lot of versatility in that. So can he start showing more of the off the move stuff? Can he start, you know, curling around screens and nailing threes? Can he start doing all that type of stuff? Carson Edwards, like, show.
Forget about it.
Wow.
I just don't see a long term fit in Boston with Carson Edwards, and I'm not tuning into summer league games to see the marginal improvements in Carson's game. I think Nesmith, the movement, catching the ball, like coming off screens and being able to knock down threes, I want to see like four of those every half in the Summer League Celtics. Like, that should be what he works on, because that's just a part of the Celtics offense that has just not existed pretty much in the Tatum-Brown era, as someone who can move without the ball and just catch and shoot and like immediately like rise, catch and shoot. And like, that is what Aaron Nesmith has been billed as something he can do. And I think if someone on defense has to follow Aaron Nesmith around because he can do and knock down that shot consistently, it just opens everything up. And that's just like an elite talent that if the Celtics did have on their offense, I think is just makes them so much more dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. That could change things for the Celtics. If Nesmith can become that, but who knows whether he can, you know, like, he didn't look very comfortable shooting the three for most of his rookie season. He ended up shooting decent percentage. So we'll see whether he's like a pretty good shooter or a great one. And there's a huge difference between guys who are pretty good and guys who are great. So we'll see. And then Yam, you just want to see him.
Just want to see him ball the fuck out like Yam knows how to do.
Yeah. I mean, he's played in a very good league overseas. And so, I mean, he should be more used to it than most rookies entering their first summer league. Just because he has played at a high level before. But you want to see him show promise in his first summer league. And I was surprised when he said he plans to play for the Celtics this season, because the last that I had heard, that had not been decided. So we'll see.
Why no Beckham on the summer league roster?
I think it's just because he'll be a draft and stash guy, and there's no point in him just playing a few games in Las Vegas.
I don't know. Just see what you have in the 19-year-old French kid. So on Not Here to Argue, the pod I produced for with Tyler, we had Mike Schmitz on, and I asked him about Beguron, and he's just like, yeah, he's a guy, athletic freak, doesn't know how to really do anything else.
He is an athletic freak, and not just like run and jump. But he's got the body control, you know, it's that separates guys like the body control. So if he puts in the work to hone his skills, to up his basketball IQ, like, there's a lot to work with there. And the physical profile of a guy who could be very interesting. So, Beguron.
Bejarón needs that. He has that body control. That's the other thing I'm looking for Aaron Nesmith in summer league is to not. I just want him to control his insane energy. I don't want to see him flying around and like on the floor. Like, see if you can just rein it in a little bit, Nesmith, and still.
I want to see the madness. I want to see the chaos. I want to see him.
I want controlled madness. I want it to be just less injury risk for Aaron Nesmith, but it's going to be interesting. Before we go, we have to say pour one out for Semi Ojeleye. Signs his big deal with the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, the one way to contain the Giannis stopper is just to put him on Giannis's team. And so Semi Ojeleye, I thought actually like probably would have been a like decent guy to come back just because we've seen him. Like if he's the 11th man on your roster, it's okay. But you know what? Go. Have fun in Milwaukee. Solid career here in Boston. Nice guy. Kudos to him.
Yeah, he just a genuinely great dude. Someone who was always good to talk to from my perspective because, you know, he's just, first of all, very, very kind human, very, very respectable. And he was good at breaking down the game and letting you know, like, kind of what was going on from a basketball perspective. So I'll miss working with Semi Ojeleye, and I think he could be a pretty good fit in Milwaukee. Obviously they lost PJ Tucker. And he's not PJ Tucker, but he gives you some of the 6'8", you know, stand in the corner and at least semi space the floor and guard physical dudes. So I think it could be a good fit where he doesn't have to do much because they have a lot of, you know, really good players around him, and he could just stand there, spot up, hit threes, and play a little defense.
Another shout out to former Celtic Daniel Theis, getting 4 years, $36 million with the Rockets. I don't really get paying Daniel Theis $36 million over 4 years. I don't know what the Rockets are doing, but I'm all for it. I said Theis was more than a $5 million a year player, and he's an $8 million a year player, goddammit.
36 divided by 4 is 9, man.
9! He's a $9 million a year player. I undersold Theis in my head. I apologize.
Your math is a little suspect. But, yeah, I'm just – and he just kept grinding, you know? Like, he came over for 2 years. He was behind Al Horford and Aaron Baines. Didn't really get to play much, especially his second year. And – just kept grinding, proved himself as a starter, just had to play the four, had to play out of position, had to try to be something that he wasn't, got dumped for luxury tax purposes in a, like, not a good trade for the Celtics, so it didn't get them out of the tax. And now he's paid, and not all centers get paid. So salute to Theis for grinding his way into not just a mid-level type deal, but 4 years too.
Think of all the steals he's going to provide for Jalen Green. I think like if Jalen Green drops 26 a game next year, it's because Theis opened up those shots for him.
It has nothing to do with his supreme talent that made him the number two pick. It's all the Theis seal.
No, that's like the first 23 points, but that extra bump to 26 is because of those Theis seals.
The Theis bump.
I mean, the classic Theis bump. The Theis seal is a very effective move, and it's one of the reasons the Celtics offense suffered last year. Any other, I guess, big takeaways from the first couple, or I guess the first 24 hours of free agency? I think the thing that stood out to me the most was Kyle Lowry going to the Heat for 3 years, $90 million. He's 35 years old. That is a lot of money, but I do think it makes the Heat just a much more solid contender, even though it was really, really annoying to play against Goran Dragic the last couple of years, like because he's a very solid player and killed the Celtics in that Eastern Conference Finals. I just think Kyle Lowry is a solid veteran, and Lowry, Bam, and Jimmy just feels like a pretty solid team.
Yeah, and then on top of all the shooting that Lowry gives them, he's been more durable than Dragic, it feels like at least. He's been more at the top of his craft than Dragic consistently. And they just have a chance to be incredible defensively. Like, just incredible with Lowry, Jimmy, Bam, and PJ Tucker. And then Duncan Robinson, who's 6'8", or whatever he is. Not a great defender, but long and, like, knows where to be. Like, that could be a really, really good defense in crunch time. And I just think Lowry – I've always been a huge Lowry fan. You know that. I think he just brings a lot to a team. And so Dragic was similar, though. When they were in the bubble, he was awesome. I'm not sure he's ever played better than he did during that run to the finals. But Lowry should help them. PJ Tucker should help them.
Max Strus, they got him back.
Max Strus. Former Celtic two-way for like 10 minutes, and then they waved him.
He's a Max solid Strus. Player. But, yeah, no, I don't think it makes the Heat like – I don't think it puts them in the top tier with the Bucks or the Nets, but I think it's like pretty much they're on the same tier as the 76ers right now. If the 76ers – who knows what's going to happen in that situation, but it's just like they're a pretty solid team, but who knows?
I still think the Nets, not even the Bucks, the Nets are, to me, the class of the Eastern Conference. If they can stay healthy, then it's the Bucks.
Especially because they just added Patty Mills. Like, they brought
their
like,
offense is going to be tough.
Their offense is going to be tough. Their they brought back really Blake. Tough. They might be able to get out from DeAndre Jordan's contract with a possible sign and trade for Spencer Dinwiddie. Like, that's the other thing. Is like, there's people, Celtics fans are so pissed off they didn't do anything this year. Do they have any chance of being the Nets next year in the playoffs, no matter who they added? Like, it feels like the Nets have the ownership of the Eastern Conference, at least for the next 2 seasons.
You are so strange because you are half supreme optimist and then half totally defeated.
Like I'm realistic, bro. I'm realistic.
You have totally given up on the Celtics.
I'm optimistic about the long term.
You have decided they should just target somebody who can help in the regular season because the playoffs aren't going to really matter. You have written them off entirely.
Well, yeah. Now I'm going to be pleased if they exceed my expectations. It's going to be fantastic. If they win 48 games next year, I'm going to be through the roof because I don't think they're a 48-win team. Like before, when they lost Horford the first time, I wrote a whole article on Boston.com. One of the few times I ever wrote things saying that you got to lower the expectations for this team and just enjoy them. And then they made the Eastern Conference Finals, and it was fantastic because it came out of nowhere. So if you lower the expectations, then anything over that is better for your outlook and your positivity moving forward.
I will say this. High expectations are good because that means they'd be more talented than they are right now.
Yeah, but having high expectations with the amount of talent they have right now is irrational, only sets yourself up for disappointment, which is not good.
Defeated.
So the
defeated optimist.
So you think I should go into next season thinking that the Celtics are going to compete for an NBA championship? Tell me where my thinking is wrong.
No, they should not compete for an NBA championship. They have a lot of work to do to get to that level. I think that's pretty clear based on how last season finished, based on how the roster is currently shaping up. Anything could still happen. Like, they're not done making moves yet. They're not done maybe trading. They're definitely not done in free agency. They haven't signed anyone yet. So we'll see. But, yeah, keep the expectations low. Be a defeated optimist. Like,
I mean,
Jim Packard.
If they sign Georges Niang, like I predicted and promised about 3 weeks ago, I'm going to be through the roof. Local guy from Methuen. It's going to be gives you size, 40% three-point shooter, the exact size and shooting that this team needs. And then they're a frisky team in the East. And that's a fun time for me. And then I get to see the Jays get better. Jason Tatum, who Kevin Durant anointed as the next big thing over there in the Olympics, that he's the next guy who's going to break the Olympic scoring record for the U.S. I get to see another year of growth between those two superstars. I'm going to be having fun next year, while everyone else is going to be pissed off because we didn't sign Patty Mills or didn't sign Lonzo Ball in a sign-in trade that was never going to happen. Sorry for not being an irrational asshole.
Are people really that mad?
People were pretty upset when the Lonzo Ball was signing came out that the Celtics didn't do it. They were very ready to trade Marcus Smart for him. People are just upset when deals don't happen. I think it's because more of the casual fans tune in more for free agency season. And then if a deal doesn't get made, they get upset. And then the people who actually watch the entire regular season, who knew that the top targets this year were Rudy Gay and Georges Niang, reacted more reasonably. You know, the pessimistic optimists like me.
The defeated optimist, Jim Packard.
Is being a defeated optimist potable, Jay?
It turns out it is.